Hello and welcome back to the For the Property Investor podcast, and welcome back for the weekly news segment, Nick Bendall. Nick, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Owen.
Looking forward to hearing what's happened in the past week in all things property and finance news. What's been happening with you in the past week?
Well, for those who don't know, I'm the owner of Hunter and Scribe, which is a copywriting agency that writes content for property and finance professionals. And one of the things we do, Owen, to help our clients is we help them get media coverage by writing media releases that are going to be enticing to different publications. And we had an interesting thing happen in the past week. We wrote two different media releases for two different clients, one a mortgage broker, another a non-bank lender. And we distributed these media releases to publications around the country. And funnily enough, one publication published both of those media releases. And at one stage, two of their top three stories were Hunter and Scribe stories, which was very nice.
Wow, fantastic. All right, so you're dominating the whole media landscape.
Not all of it, just two-thirds of it.
Within the property finance industry, at least, yeah.
Exactly. And what have you been up to over the past week?
Past week feels like a long time ago this past week. Yes, we've been busy growing, so we've got new staff members, new team members joining us. Upcoming and still putting the finishing tweaks to our Adelaide launch for providing property management services in Adelaide, which rounds out the five biggest states and territories in the country. So for us, looking forward to finally getting that going. So.
Well, that will be nice, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of the five places where Leafield is positioned is Western Australia.
Yes, it is, and that brings us into the first story. You're master of segues there, Nick.
Well, and I love the fact that you now know exactly what I'm doing. We're finishing each other's sentences these days.
Oh, geez, yeah, we've been doing this for too long.
We have indeed, but I love you just as much, Owen.
Oh, so, thanks, Nick.
Our first story, as you suggested, WA introduces rental reform. Western Australia has made a series of rental reforms. Here are six of the things that will change. First, rental properties will have to be listed for a fixed price rather than a range or a from price. Owen, what are your thoughts on that change?
Fairly common sense and common practice nowadays across the rest of the country. It seems like WA is just falling in line with the other major states who have already brought that in a while ago.
Okay, well, a second thing that's going to change, rent bidding has been banned, which means property managers and landlords won't be able to ask for more than the advertised rent. However, tenants will still be able to voluntarily offer more. What are your thoughts on that change?
Yep. Again, same. Most other states have already brought this into effect. In New South Wales, when that first came in to effect, which is where the biggest part of our business is for property management. It wasn't a big change. It was at a time when rents were rapidly increasing. So we were openly telling people that if they wanted to be first on the list, we weren't necessarily just trying to bump up prices as high as possible, but it was a matter of people genuinely wanted to know when there was like 20, 30 plus applications, what can they do to be at the top of the list? And they say, well, yeah, be the highest price. If we thought that was that there was a better tenant who really wanted the property, we would go back to them and say, yeah, you're the first choice, but you're not it. In terms of the type of tenant, but you're not the first choice in terms of price. Are you prepared to offer more? And so that was fairly common practice. And no, we weren't doing it just to try and bump prices up and get it as high as possible. We were wanting to be able to give the opportunity to what we thought was the best quality tenant for the owner. And yes, more money is great as well. That's the bonus, but it's more about getting the right tenant. So as a result, now with these reforms, we've found that, yes, it's a lot easier. We don't have to have this back and forth all the time, because we are really, as property managers, the umpires on the field. Mm. You know, we're the ones interpreting the rules for the owner, as well as you know, dealing with the tenants and prospective tenants, and yeah, having to be that balance in between for both. So now, yes, it's a lot easier for us to be able to say that's the price, you know, and if people ask if they can pay more, it's just, yeah, we can tell them that, well, we can't ask you to pay more. That's your choice to offer more if you want. Yeah, so it's a lot easier on us as property managers to not have to have that to and fro all the time.
Well, that's a good insight into, I guess, how things are now going to evolve in WA.
Yes.
And another of the changes, so this is the third change we're going to talk about. If a tenant believes retaliatory action has been taken against them for exercising their rental rights, they will be able to challenge that action in court. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, it's again, they're falling in line with other states. It's something that's hard to prove, because it's based on a tenant's choices, or actions, then an owner can change their mind in terms of what they want to do. So it's and that's not unfair for them to do that, but it's it's something that's hard to prove. So I don't think there's been many cases that have been tested yet in the other states. So yes, at the end of the day, what it's doing is it's forcing everyone to be nice and fair up front to prevent having to go to tribunal.
Okay. And another one of the changes, rent increases will be allowed only once every 12 months. Is that reasonable or unreasonable?
Yeah, very reasonable. It's, again, the same in most other states, and definitely in all the states that we operate in.
Okay. And pets will generally be allowed in WA rental properties, although tenants must seek permission. Is that reasonable or unreasonable?
Again, reasonable. It's in fact, we always encourage owners to accept applications, with pets, and base each application on its merits, including their pets.
Let me ask you about that, because I spent a couple of weeks in Adelaide over the Christmas holidays, where Leafield is just opening up, and I was going for a walk one day. I was staying in Glenelg, and I was going for a walk one day along the Esplanade, and on the beach, kind of maybe 50 meters away, but beyond the line of my good vision, I saw a guy with what appeared to be an alpaca. And I told my dad back at the hotel, and he said, no, that can't be the case. 2 days later, I was going for another walk in the same area, and I saw the same bloke with an alpaca. And this time he wasn't on the beach, he was in a park. And I went up to him and I asked him about this alpaca. Why have you got an alpaca? And he told me the story. Anyway, he loved bringing the alpaca to the park, because the alpaca would just eat all the grass, and he was feeding the alpaca for free. Now, this is my very long-winded way of saying, does Leafield encourage landlords to allow applications from tenants with alpacas?
It's Funny, I've never used the analogy of an alpaca, but when tenants have asked, or prospective tenants have asked, are pets acceptable? And it's like, well, on application, they are considered. It all depends on what you've got and whether it's suitable for the property. And usually I throw in there, as long as you haven't got a horse to bring in into this 2-bedroom unit. Sometimes it gets a laugh. You know what? If it was an acreage property or a large block of land in a suburban area that where alpacas are allowed by the local government to be in the backyard, then if everything else stacked up in the application, we would put it through to the owner for them to decide.
I think this bloke has found a loophole. I think he was sick of property managers telling him, you can have pets as long as it's not a horse. So he's like, well, in that case, I'll buy an alpaca.
maybe. But horses are allowed as well, as long as it's on a acreage property. Yes, it's as the old saying goes, horses for courses.
Very, very nice. Let me run one more change by you that's happening in WA. Yeah. Tenants will generally be allowed to make small personalized changes to the home, such as putting up fly screens or planting vegetable gardens, although tenants must seek permission. Is that reasonable or unreasonable?
Oh, yes. As long as they still need to ask permission, there's absolutely no issue with that. It's yes, especially things like fly screens and planting vegetable gardens and putting in compost systems and things like that. Yeah.
Okay. I was actually going to ask you about composting. We will save a composting chat for another time because obviously the listeners have no idea what we're talking about.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes, we were talking about. Yes, well, that usually what's that's one flow-on effect from putting in veggie gardens is you have all that waste from the veggie garden that you don't eat, and it's best to compost it. But that's for a conversation for another podcast episode.
Well, our second story, we're moving from WA to Queensland. Queensland introduces housing reform. Queensland has passed the Housing Availability and Affordability Bill. The Queensland government says this bill will remove planning barriers in locations where critical housing supply is needed, create a special team that will fast-track the assessment of development applications for infill housing developments that deliver diverse and affordable housing. The Queensland government also says this bill will allow the Housing Minister to approve development applications only on condition that they include social and affordable housing, and allow the Housing Minister to acquire land or create easements to stop infrastructure requirements delaying large-scale residential projects. So, Owen, starting with Queensland's plan to fast-track the assessment of development applications for infill housing developments, what do you think of that?
Brilliant. Yeah, it's for this current Queensland government, it's the best idea they've had ever. I'm now thinking it's unfortunate that with their pending state election coming up, it's unlikely that they'll stay in power. I would hope that the opposition in Queensland would think that this is a good idea and continue it on, because this is exactly what we need for governments to be able to get involved. This is the thing that they can do to help the supply issue, which is what we've been banging on about here on this podcast every week, Nick, since the dinosaurs, was the only way to fix this issue long term is to put a lot more supply into the market. And the best way that governments can do that is to get involved with cutting the red tape, getting development applications approved as soon as possible, finding ways to be able to get more, because with infill housing developments, that means it's in existing suburban areas where there's already the infrastructure. So it's low costs to the general community, and they're able to get these properties built quickly and on the market for living in as soon as possible. So yeah, I think it's great that they're finally making these moves.
And what do you think of the idea that the housing minister can force developers to build social and affordable housing as a condition of approving a project?
There's a bit of politics in that for scoring votes. It's not that it's not needed, but it's if they're doing it just for the sake of doing it, but it's not done appropriately in the right areas and so on, and the only reason they're doing it on developments is to tick a box, to get a box ticked number one at the polling booth, then that's the wrong reason for doing it. If we need more housing across the board, both at the high end, middle income areas as well as low income areas. So, and as long if there's enough supply in general across the board, then it will it'll help the whole market. So as long as it's appropriate, I don't have any problem with it.
Okay, and final one to throw at you. What do you think of the idea that the housing minister can forcibly acquire land or forcibly create easements in order to facilitate the building of infrastructure like water, power and roads that new developments need?
It's surprising that they can't already do that. At the end of the day, in major city, if you need, or in any city, I guess, not just the majors, but if you need to put a new highway in, need to put a new railroad project in, or in this case, you need infrastructure for water or power, then it needs to be done for the greater community. It's sad to see people who might have been in their houses for decades and they're emotionally tied to it. It's healthy to have change in life every so often.
Okay, well, sounds like you're broadly supportive of what's happened in both WA and Queensland with these rental and housing reforms. In terms of our third and final story, jobs market continues strong run. The national unemployment rate remains in extraordinarily low territory, despite ticking up from 3.7% in February to 3.8% in March, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics. The unemployment rate has had a 3 in front of it every single month since June 2022, apart from in January when it climbed to 4.1%. When the Reserve Bank started increasing the cash rate in May 2022, some economists assumed that would lead to a sharp rise in unemployment because the Reserve Bank's interest rate rises were designed to slow the economy and thereby reduce inflation. Surprisingly, though, unemployment is actually lower now than it was back in May 2022 when the Reserve Bank started raising interest rates. So it's 3.8 now, it was 4% then. This strong employment market, though, is a mixed blessing. On the one hand, it's great news that so many Australians have jobs. On the other hand, the Reserve Bank might be wary of reducing the cash rate anytime soon in case it adds too much heat to the economy and puts upward pressure on inflation. Owen, I'm keen to hear your thoughts, given that a low unemployment rate is indirectly contributing to interest rates remaining higher for longer. Should we be dismayed that unemployment is so low?
Oh, it's we should never really be dismayed that unemployment is low. What it's showing is that we've still got a healthy economy. Yeah, there's lots of people out there in the both mainstream and social medias that are trying to talk the economy down, that we're in a technical per capita recession. You know, it's just like, well, yeah, you can pull some obscure statistic out to prove anything, can't you? But the fact that we've got unemployment, at a reasonably low rate with higher interest rates, then it's not something that we need to be worried about. Especially with all of the high immigration that we've had. And all of those people have got jobs. So that's not a bad thing. It's keeping our economy going. The only issue is we need to house more of these people. And yes, and seeing that the property market is still going strong is another indicator to show that the economy is going well with these higher interest rates. So there's still a lot of people struggling, but there's a lot of people that obviously are doing well.
Well, speaking of interest rates, there has been a widespread assumption with most of the economists I hear that at some point this year, the Reserve Bank is going to start reducing the cash rate. Low unemployment, the sort of low unemployment we've been talking about, is supporting consumption because the more people who have jobs, the more people who are going to spend money. Also, when the stage three tax cuts take effect from July 1, people will have even more money to spend. Both of those things are likely to put upward pressure on inflation. And with that in mind, can you foresee a scenario in which the Reserve Bank does not reduce the cash rate in 2024?
Yeah, well, it's I've always said that you they can't accurately predict anything more than about 3 months away. So, everyone's been saying sort of September as the first possible rate cut. And how many months away is that? That's
Five
what,
months.
five? Yeah. It's until we get there, until we see the exact effect of the tax cuts have on the economy, they can't really make a decision until then. So yes, there could be good reason to keep interest rates where they are.
Okay, well, this has been a very interesting chat, Owen. Rental reforms, housing reforms, unemployment, composting, alpacas. Always love our chats.
Yes, thank you to you, Nick. And yes, always good chats. Can't wait to see what's happening in the news next week.
I wish it was already next week.
All right, we'll see you then.
See you then.